MXT and Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, climate change could slow the growth of Alaska coral, but at least Alaskan seafood is free of Fukushima-related radiation, as far as authorities know. Also, there won't be a commercial tanner crab fishery in the Bering Sea this season, but there will be more opportunities for subsistence fishermen to fish for king salmon along the Upper Yukon. That and more coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says warming ocean temperatures due to climate change could slow the growth of some Alaska coral. In a study released last week, scientists warned about the potential impact to fish which take refuge in thickets of coral. Bob Stone, a fisheries research biologist, dove in the waters of southeast Alaska to photograph one group of sea fans, a type of coral. His team returned yearly for a period of 5 years, and they noticed it wasn't growing as quickly as they had anticipated.
There is evidence from other studies around the world that show that for some corals under warmer conditions, they do grow more slowly. So it's surprising to us, but important, because at least at the present moment, you know, our oceans are warming, particularly here in the Gulf of Alaska.
Sea fans grow in the waters of British Columbia, spreading all the way to the Aleutian Chain. There are around 136 different types of coral in Alaska waters. In the future, scientists think ocean acidification could threaten coral, too. Alaskan seafood remains free of detectable Fukushima-related radiation. That's according to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation last week. The department, along with other state, federal, and international agencies, has been testing Alaskan seafood since 2013. After the 2011 Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan, food safety authorities, including the FDA, reported it would be highly unlikely that radiation would affect Pacific seafood in the U.S. But there was still significant public concern in Alaska, says Marlena Brewer, the spokesperson for DEC.
Fishing is such a huge part of our lives here, so I think that there was just an overwhelming concern. They wanted to see, you know, Alaska-specific data.
Food safety inspectors were already collecting samples around Alaska as a part of normal food safety operations. In 2013, they began collecting additional samples to send to the FDA lab in Massachusetts to test for Fukushima-related radiation. Species tested include king, chum, sockeye and pink salmon, halibut, pollock, sablefish, herring, and Pacific cod. In 2016, Alaska was selected as the first state test site for implementation of a field-deployable gamma-ray analysis system to analyze fish for radionuclides. The system is housed in Anchorage. The FDA continues to analyze the results, but now the samples are tested in state.
The idea is that in the unfortunate event that there's another incident like Fukushima, that FDA would be able to deploy these instruments to other states so that they could get some real-time monitoring data instead of kind of scrambling after the fact and trying to coordinate these sampling efforts like we have.
Brewer says that they will continue to test Alaska seafood specifically for Fukushima-related radiation for at least one more year. None has been detected since testing began.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K through 12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
The Board of Fisheries went over fisheries proposals and potential regulations at its meeting in Kodiak last week, but it also heard a presentation about the origin and migratory pathways of king salmon in the Kodiak management area. The focus comes from a concern about poor king salmon returns and what that could mean about the health of salmon stocks. The Chinook Salmon Research Initiative study, which continued from 2014 to 2016, looked at the marine sport fisheries in Kodiak and the commercial fisheries in Kodiak, Chinook, and the Alaska Peninsula. Principal geneticist Chris Hobbicht explained scientists used genetics to trace samples back to their stock of origin.
They have slight differences in the frequency and the number of certain gene types. And so we look at that variation from population to population. Each population is going to have a fingerprint of these allele frequencies that's different from one another. And that's the information that we're trying to allocate back. That's the information we're trying to match between the mixture sample and the baseline.
The report at the board meeting last week gave an overview only on the Kodiak area. Fisheries geneticist Kyle Shedd said over the 3 years of the study, they found that British Columbia dominated commercial Chinook stocks. The West Coast United States group also contributed to the bulk of the harvest, with smaller numbers from Southeast Alaska, Cook Inlet, and Kodiak. There were similar results for the Kodiak marine sport harvest, where stocks from British Columbia and the West Coast came up on top, but were also roughly equal as opposed to the commercial fishery, where British Columbia was higher. There will be no commercial Tanner crab fishery in the Bering Sea this season. The Alaska Board of Fisheries made the decision last week after a last-ditch attempt to allow a limited harvest failed with a split vote, 3-3. An Alaska Mayor Frank Kelty attended the board meeting, where members considered a proposal that would have let crabbers harvest 10% of mature male baird eye in the Western District.
The industry folks and coastal communities and processors, we thought 4 million pounds out of the total 40 million pounds was a pretty minimal ask.
But concerns about conservation finally won out, and the $50 million fishery has been canceled this year. The Tanner season had been in limbo since the fall, when the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced the stock had fallen short of the opening threshold by nearly 2 million pounds. The crab industry and coastal communities questioned the accuracy of the population survey, as well as a conservative management strategy, which relies on female biomass as the deciding factor. The baird eye fishery supported strong harvests for the last two seasons, but biologists with Fish and Game say numbers are now down across the board. Record low females, fewer males, and almost no recruitment of juvenile crab. Still, Kelty says there may be hope for next season because the Board of Fisheries has decided to review criticisms of the harvest strategy at a future meeting.
We're hoping that this will be an issue that we can get addressed later on this year, and so we don't have a harvestable surplus of male crab being left on the grounds because of this female threshold level.
The board has said that meeting may happen this spring.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
Subsistence fishermen along the upper Yukon will get more chances to catch king salmon at the end of the run, but not at the beginning, due to actions taken by the Federal Subsistence Board in Anchorage last week. The board adopted a proposal to open king salmon fishing in Subdistrict 5D, which runs from Stevens Village to the Canadian border, as soon as the midpoint of the Canadian border passage goal for kings is projected to be achieved. That works out to a projected border passage number of 48,750 kings. Fort Yukon fisherman Andrew Furman told the board that the proposal intends to prevent a repeat of the 2015 season, when subsistence fishing remained closed in 5D, even when the border passage estimate climbed over 84,000 kings.
Where are we sitting home waiting to fish when we're 30,000 salmon beyond the escapement goals, as was the case in that 1 year? We're not trying to tie anybody's hands. We're not trying to take anything away from managers, but it's more of a reminder.
The proposal passed with 7 votes in favor and 1 against. The lone vote in opposition came from Fish and Wildlife Service Representative Karen Clark, who argued that guaranteeing a late-run harvest of kings in 5D could take options off of the table for fishery managers and would create a preference for certain users over others on the river. Similar arguments filled the debate over another proposal, which would have guaranteed king salmon fishing opportunities in sub-district 5D on the so-called tricklers, fish that migrate upriver before the first concentrated pulse of fish arrives. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Yukon River fishery manager Fred Bew told the board that the proposal, if passed, would have ripple effects downriver.
And on marginal runs, the question will be, is how much opportunity to other fishermen do we do, because this is giving a priority to the sub-district 5D over other users. And so that becomes an element in my decision, how much do I restrict the other users.
Ultimately, the board rejected the proposal by a vote of 3 in favor to 5 opposed. The Federal Subsistence Board also approved a modified version of a proposal introduced last year, which gives fishermen in the Huslia area the right to block off more than half of a waterway to harvest northern pike. Quota shares in the fisheries came up at last week's meeting of the Sitka Assembly. Assemblymember Aaron Bean withdrew his proposal to set up an MQE, or Municipal Quota Entry. It called upon the city to buy halibut and black cod quota shares and lease them to local fishermen. A handful of those locals, as well as the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, spoke out against the idea. In an interview with KCAW, Director Linda Benkin said that allowing organizations, such as cities, businesses, and nonprofits, to buy shares hurts independent fishermen and drives up market prices.
Anytime you add more buying power into the market, particularly if it's an entity that has different borrowing status than an individual, you're going to raise that cost of entry. You're going to make it that much more difficult for the people who live in these communities to gain that access.
Bean disagrees. He thinks that the best way to lower the cost of entry is by allowing the city to purchase for those who can't afford to join the fleet. The way it's done now, he says, where shares are allocated to individuals, prevents more people from getting involved.
The unforeseen consequence of the IFQ program haunts, in my mind, haunts a lot of people today. They put a monetary value on individuals' average catch over a year, or over 3 or 4 years, and gave them that quota and then closed the door to everyone else on the planet.
Benkin agrees that the barrier for entry to the fishing fleet is too high, but that the best way to solve it is by providing financial support to young fishermen. The Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association has established a local fish fund, and in December, Congress gave their support for a federal program to train young fishermen. Ultimately, Bean withdrew his proposal for an MQE after fellow Assemblymember Kevin Knox withdrew his co-sponsorship. But Bean wants the Assembly to consider forming a community quota entity, or CQE. That's when a community forms a nonprofit to buy and lease shares. There are 42 communities that qualify for a CQE in Alaska, all with populations below 1,500. Under current guidelines from the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, Sitka is too big to qualify.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from FIYU's Tim Bodoni and Galena, KTOO and Alaska Energy Desk's Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, KUCB's Laura Craigle in Unalaska, KCAW's Emily Kwong in Sitka, and KDLG's Avery Lill in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.